Hi, my name is Marie-Ève Isabelle. I'm the Vice President External of the Postgraduate Student Society, which represent Master, PhD students and Postdoctoral Fellow at McGill University. So PGSS has been leading an information campaign since the beginning of the school year, and we've been distributing a lot of information about the increase on tuition fees, and we got a lot of support from our membership. So a survey that we did last semester was showing that only 20% of students were in favor of the increase. There was a 60% that was against it, and a 20% that wanted more information about it. So that's what we've tried to provide to students since then. Now this semester we've been trying to encourage students to start doing more and getting involved. And so one thing to do that is to participate to the demonstration that will happen on March 22nd. And we hope to have as many students as possible participating to it. So for that to happen, we propose at the annual general meeting a vote for a one-day strike on March 22nd. And the goal was really to encourage participation to the March 22nd demonstration. It was also to show our support to the Quebec student movement and to continue to raise awareness on the issue. Now, when it was proposed at the annual general meeting, there was an amendment made on the floor to have it a three-day strike instead of a one-day strike.
Can you talk a bit about the activities that will be going on in the days leading up to the big protest?
So we are still working on it. Things are happening very fast. We're also working with the Graduate Student Mobilization Group at organizing some of these activities. So starting next week, there will be some teachings, some information sessions. We will be talking about, of course, tuition fee increases and why we oppose it. We're going to be talking about accessibility, research, the role of graduate students in society. We're also going to talk about peaceful demonstration. We want the demonstration on March 22nd to be really safe for everyone, to be very peaceful, so we're working hard on it. So we're going to have an information session about that as well. There's going to be creative actions encouraged, and we're going to work with the Graduate Student Association so to encourage them and to support them into making some creative actions or symbolic actions. We already have departments who have committed into some of these, like writing letters to MNAs, like maybe putting up posters, stuff like that. So we're going to be with them for that.
Est-ce que c'est la première fois qu'il y a une grève à l'Université McGill?
McGill est quand même reconnue pour être une université assez conservatrice si on la compare aux autres universités. Je vais parler seulement pour la PGSS, pour les étudiants des cycles supérieurs. Donc, dans ce qu'on a, en fait, dans nos archives, ce qu'on a vu, c'est qu'il y avait eu deux grèves d'une journée dans les dernières, disons, 40 années, depuis que l'Association des cycles supérieurs est officiellement indépendante des premiers cycles. Donc, une journée de grève en 1996, une journée de grève en 2005. C'est la première fois qu'on a une grève de 3 jours.
Qu'est-ce que tu penses du fait que les étudiants du premier cycle ont voté hier soir de ne pas faire la grève?
Je pense que ça n'empêchera pas les étudiants de premier cycle de participer à la démonstration du 22 mars s'ils veulent. Et je crois aussi que ça ne veut pas nécessairement dire que les étudiants ne supportent pas la campagne. En fait, je pense que la plupart des étudiants supportent la campagne contre la hausse des frais de scolarité. Donc là, il y a une décision qui a été prise. C'est leur choix. Je pense qu'il faut, respecter ça. Maintenant, je pense qu'il faut quand même continuer à encourager tout le monde à participer aux activités qui vont être organisées.
So my name is Laruna Lewis, and I represent AGSEM, McGill's Teaching Union, which represents invigilators, course lecturers, and teaching assistants employed on a part-time basis at McGill, and we are associated with FENEC CSN.
During the press conference, you mentioned that first-generation students are less likely to take out loans. Mm-hmm. Can you just give a little more background on that?
Students whose parents have not gone to university are less likely to go to university. Number one, they'll be afraid of the debt, so they equate education with debt, which is unfortunate. Perspective. In terms of having access to the information as to where to find financial resources to attend university, a lot of times the students wouldn't know where to go to find information to access the loans and bursaries that are supposed to be out there. Inherent inequalities in the society are reproduced through education. And in a just society, you want to look for areas that can promote this reproduction of inequality and see how you can break down those barriers.
I'm Justin Marlowe. I'm a PhD student in biology. and I am part of the Graduate Student Mobilization Group, and I was doing some research on the McGill budget for the Graduate Student Mobilization Group. So the first thing I did was go onto the website, look at the McGill budget books. They have them from 2007 to 2012. And while McGill states that they're running a $6 million deficit, if you look at the overall budget, it's only a $3 million deficit on a $1.06 billion budget, which indicates that A, their deficit isn't as large as they said it was, and B, why is the operating deficit so much larger than the overall budget deficit? McGill's been gaining a lot more money in its operating fund the last couple years. It's grown over 25% over the last 5 years. And McGill is very ambitious about its capital assets. We know that they like buying hotels. McGill's trying to expand. So they spend a lot of money on the buildings. They spend more money than they have available in terms of their capital revenue.
My name is Mona Luxon. I'm a graduate student and the publicity coordinator for Queer McGill, which is a service for queer and trans students and their allies at McGill.
Can you talk about the particular precarity of queers that would make it, the barriers to having the amount of money necessary to live up to those tuition increases?
So there are a number of different reasons why queer students are particularly affected by the hikes. We are more likely to have strained family relationships that put us in financial difficulty. Trans people especially, but queer people across the board, often have additional medical expenses that put them in a precarious situation. We face job discrimination. We tend to make less money over our careers. All of these things make it more difficult for queer and trans students to be able to afford tuition, and especially an increased level of tuition. So I think those are very important points. And additionally, universities are often a safe space for queer and trans students, sometimes the first place where they really feel like they can be themselves, and so blocking access to that resource is a particular detriment to our community. And as grad students, some of us planning to go into academia, academic jobs are known for their queer and trans friendliness often, and that's an additional avenue that's cut off if tuition hikes go up.
McGill and other universities in Quebec have argued that the operating deficits that they've been continuously running for the past decade or so shows that McGill and the other universities are not being funded at appropriate levels by the Quebec government. So the first thing I did was go onto the website, look at the McGill budget books. They have them from 2007 to 2012. And what I found quite peculiar is that while McGill states that they're running a $6 million deficit, if you look at the overall budget, it's only a $3 million deficit on a $1.06 billion budget, which indicates that, A, their deficit isn't as large as they said it was in the overall budget, and B, why is the operating deficit so much larger than the overall budget deficit? So then I decided to look more deeply into the way that McGill is actually financed. And so there's four funds in the budget. There's the operating fund, which is the largest fund. It gets lots of money to run the operations of the universities, used for teaching, it's used for research, it's used for paying administrative and support staff, all these other things. There's the restricted fund, which generally comes from government grants and some other donations, which is used for restricted purposes. So you can't just use that money for anything. Then you have the plant fund or capital fund, which is normally used for the purchasing of capital assets and the maintenance of capital assets. So you can talk about buildings, you can also talk about vehicles, things like that are part of the capital. And lastly, we have the endowment fund. So these are where most of the donations of the university go to. It's how they make their investment money, and it's supposed to be the fund that provides intergenerational welfare. So the funding levels that we get currently is supposed to go on for our future generations. And what was very interesting is that you start looking at the way that McGill transfers monies between these funds. So if you look at, say, this year's budget, and if you look at the raw numbers before, they have these what they call intra-fund transfers, where you transfer money from one fund to the other. The operating fund actually had a $28 million surplus, and the restricted fund had a $13 million surplus, and the capital fund had a almost $43 million deficit. It's just that the cost of operation, so the salaries, all those other costs, compared to the revenues that we generate from the operating fund, were a lot less, which is fine. Some years it could be higher, it could be lower, but McGill's been getting a lot more money in its operating fund the last couple years. It's grown over 25% over the last 5 years. And the restrictive fund is also quite large. They've been getting a lot of money in the restrictive fund as well. But the capital fund, you receive a certain amount of money from the Quebec government and some other sources, but generally, it's not that high, and McGill is very ambitious about its capital assets. We know that they like buying hotels. McGill's trying to expand. So they spend a lot of money on the buildings. They spend more money than they have available in terms of their capital revenue. So what they do then is then transfer money from the operating fund, restrictive fund, as well as the endowment fund, into the capital fund. So then what happens is that instead of having these very large surpluses in the operating fund, you end up with a $6 million deficit in the operating fund, a $1 million deficit in the restricted fund, and then a $10 million surplus in the capital fund, which means that they've accumulated more assets, capital assets. You could reduce the rate of accumulation of assets and liquidate them and then allocate that money towards the operations of the university, and you won't even have these deficits.
The postgraduate students have decided to go on a 3-day strike. Why not a longer strike?
McGill's a very special place. It's home to relatively well-off students, very high academic achievers, people who believe that any delays, say, in their progression through university will cost them monetary amounts. And academic delays then lead to delays in employment, which leads to delays in their dream jobs, and et cetera.
What do you think about the fact that the art and science undergraduate decided last night not to go on strike?
I was present at the Arts Undergraduate Society General Assembly yesterday as an observer and a volunteer. And I was very disappointed that it took so long to get things set up. I think based on the precedent that we saw at other GAs, the PGSS GA was overflowing. They could have expected to have more students there. And because it took 3 hours to set up, there was no time left for debate. And I think that the debate is really important in terms of making these sorts of democratic decisions. And the fact that there was no debate was really harmful to students understanding what a strike would actually mean, and so they ended up voting against it.
Interesting. Hmm.
But I think that it's incredibly telling that 44% of students voted for a strike, even with that limited debate period. And so I think we need to remember that there is a strong pro-strike movement at McGill, even if that particular vote didn't pass.
And finally, why are the postgraduate students willing to strike?
I think there is a perception that every graduate student is funded. But like I said, in my department, there is no guaranteed funding for a graduate student. There was a lot of mobilization and increased awareness of the issues that students face. And because of that, people were willing to make that decision to draw attention to the injustices within the system.
L'étudiant moyen au cycle supérieur a 26 ans à la maîtrise, 31 ans au doctorat, gagne un revenu annuel entre 16 000 et 22 000 $. C'est pas beaucoup quand on a 30 ans, puis qu'on a déjà un diplôme de baccalauréat, parfois une maîtrise. Les étudiants de cet âge-là aussi, ce qui les caractérise, c'est que, un, ils n'habitent plus chez leurs parents. Deux, ils ont souvent des familles. Il y a un étudiant sur cinq qui a une famille. Et surtout, je pense que une des choses qui frappe vraiment, c'est que la moyenne d'heures travaillées par les étudiants au doctorat est de 25 heures par semaine, en plus des études. Donc, si on ajoute une hausse, qui est quand même une hausse d'à peu près 10 % sur le revenu annuel total, qu'on ajoute ça à des frais de scolarité déjà existants, qu'on ajoute ça à des frais afférents, McGill, on a les frais afférents les plus élevés au Canada, on met tout ça ensemble, ça représente au-dessus de 25 % du budget annuel d'un étudiant juste pour la facture scolaire. Et là, je ne parle même pas encore ni du matériel, ni du coût de la vie à Montréal. Comment les étudiants vont faire pour payer la différence? S'ils travaillent déjà en moyenne 25 heures par semaine, ils vont travailler 5 heures, 10 heures de plus par semaine. Puis là, on peut poser la question, comment on va faire pour continuer à avoir des résultats, à faire des publications, puis tout ce qui est compris dans les études d'essai supérieur où on doit produire beaucoup de matériel.
We work here at the university. We provide the research. We provide the... We bring in the money to the university. Like, a professor by himself can't run a lab. He needs graduate students. And quite frankly, we get paid less than our technicians get paid. We have to apply pressure on the provincial government if we want them to change their policies. It's not just going to happen by saying, well, we don't like it.